The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Up on Taconic, a podcast series that explores the world of Taconic High School from students, staff, school programs, and all the great things that happen here each day. Okay, and welcome back to Up on Taconic. We are in episode 2 of our new season here. I am Mr. Chiquette, and we want to welcome you back to Up on Taconic. And we want to welcome Cody and Brendan, who are joining us today. They are 11th graders, and we're going to let them talk about themselves in a little bit here. But before we do that, let's talk about, we're doing something a little different today, right, guys? We're talking we've been talking about this for like the last hour or so and thinking about it, but we thought it would be just a great topic today to just talk about the role of technology in today's classroom. It's very relevant. And in Pittsfield, we're kind of faced with a lot of the same challenges as many schools, which is how do we use today's modern technology that includes cell phones and even earbuds and even AI, and we'll get into the whole AI thing a little bit later, to kind of help us from a teacher point of view to teach, and then from a student point of view, how to learn and avoid the trap of allowing people to have too much access to their personal business, to texting, to social media, and all those things that can really distract you from the learning. And also the idea that AI could be helpful, but maybe do too much of the work for the students. So we have to talk about that today. So before we get into this, let's just kind of do some introductions here. Brendan, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role here at Taconic.
Well, as you said before, I'm an 11th grade student, so this is my third year here. I have been working on with Taconic TV for the last year and a half-ish, working on the Thunder Report, which you can check out. And also, I do a little bit of performing arts after school with the Taconic Theater, where in our past shows where I've been a part of all of them so far.
So you are our Renaissance man today on the scene, so we want to welcome you. Cody, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am Cody, and I am in 11th grade. Also, 3 years of Taconic, and
you've been with us in the program, right?
Yep.
Here, the CTE program of multimedia,
yep.
Formerly video and performing arts for the last, we're going into our second year now together, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, thank you for not only agreeing to kind of be on the show today, but also agreeing just to kind of talk about something that goes a little bit as an unconventional topic for us to sometimes pursue, which is kind of school policy. And it's almost dangerous in some ways, right? Because we want to make sure that we kind of we're fair to the policy, but also sort of think about where you come from a personal point of view. Mm-hmm. So let me just ask both of you this, and we can, you know, you can kind of chime in, but Brendan, I'll start with you on this one. Tell us a little bit about what you remember in terms of like the older policies with electronic devices and why you think they worked or why they didn't work.
Well, I went to a less conventional middle school. I went to St. Mary's in Lee, and their cell phone policy was very strict. You could not have it out at all on you. And it was very easy to monitor because it was such small classes. So it was just in your backpack all hours of the day. And that was that. That was as simple as that. And it wasn't really a big problem at my school as much. There wasn't any, as far as I can remember, any reprimanding. But come freshman year, and there was still a school Wi-Fi, and there was a more lenient cell phone policy. Obviously, it was still like, don't be on your phones, please. But it has changed a lot since my freshman year. And I think it's better for students, but it's definitely not the student's favorite policy, to put it lightly.
Absolutely not. And I think you've mentioned one thing that I sort of forgot about, which was a couple of years ago, the Wi-Fi was available on a student, probably a regulated, you know, like even the speed was probably regulated too, right? So it probably wasn't as fast as you wanted it to be, but they gave you a little bandwidth so you could have it, but that gave you almost everything you needed to be able to send messages and go online and do everything like that, right? So it made your phone very desirable at that time, and probably whatever policy would have been there made it more ineffective. I think they've really closed down on that, and even people getting accidentally or purposely getting into some form of the Wi-Fi, so it's harder to do now, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so you came from a school, though, that was strict right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you got used to that, and then you basically were maybe gladly reversing gears a little bit, right, to kind of know that it was a little bit more available in your early years.
Well, I mean, I never really... Even freshman year when the policy was a little more lenient, I was so used to going to school without being on a phone that it was just kind of in my head that that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
And
that's understandable because, I mean, even for me from a teacher point of view, your phone is an extension of you in terms of like people are, you're available to people, and that could be even like folks at home and, you know, caregivers and guardians and such. And it makes it really, really challenging, especially if they think that they have access to you during the school day. Right. And then you have to kind of figure that out. And that's probably one of the bigger, we can kind of come back to that. So Cody, you came up through the Pittsfield school system, correct? In elementary, middle, and now high school. Tell me a little bit about what you remember for some of the policies going back through the years for you.
Now, basically in Reed, in middle school, there were some problems with the phone. Like, people would just go on it and just watch TikToks and videos.
Yep.
And the teachers would always say to put the phone away. And someone refused to do that and stuff. They wouldn't even put it away. Yep. And it was a very, very big distraction. And there were some complaints about, you know, parents and all that.
Right. And so that probably was very challenging because from a student point of view, they want what they want. They want to be on the phone. From a teacher point of view, they're trying to do their thing and they're looking out and they're just seeing students' heads kind of glowing as they look down towards their laps and see the phones out and all that stuff. And on some level, there was probably some like, if I took the time to police all of this stuff, I would never teach. So sometimes you just let it go. I sort of remember coming back after COVID and that being very much the case, that students were so screen oriented coming back in person from COVID that it was almost impossible, completely impossible to really get 100% of the students kind of with you because they were literally like binging Netflix series and stuff while they're in class, earbuds in, all of that stuff. Right.
And that,
along with that, from COVID becoming screen oriented, not only were students more inclined to be on their phones, but education as a whole almost took a shift with having more online teaching tools that are being used in person in the classroom, like Clever, Canvas, Google Classroom, PowerSchool, were all like incredibly normalized throughout. And I don't know how that system worked before COVID, but definitely after COVID, every student getting a school-issued Chromebook. Me personally, I don't like the idea. I wish things, this is a controversial thing, but I wish more things were done on paper just because it's more like, handwritten, it's like less use of, it's easier to demonstrate your own thoughts without having like all the distractions of having a whole Chromebook in front of you. And it's allowed to be through the school. And of course they like block websites and things, but it's not foolproof 100%.
So it could almost be a makeshift cell phone in some ways if people, cause you probably can message through it and things like that. And it's probably not blocking everything, right?
Yeah.
Or once they block one thing, maybe you figure out the next thing and all of that. Yeah. So I completely understand that part of it. And I think you're right. I think one of the anomalies about what we do with ours is with our program is that even though we're very tech oriented, the way we use it sometimes in the hands-on part of the other parts of the technology, maybe you might argue that we're looking at a camera sometimes maybe more than a screen. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a slight shift in terms of how we do our thing in this particular program itself. In terms of, you know, I mean, I think there's probably the obvious answer and then there's maybe other kind of subsurface answers to this, but why do you think, Cody, I'll kind of start with you. Why do you think they decided to sort of make a bigger change this year? Over last year, they came out with a new policy and then I know some of the reasons why, but from a student perspective, why do you think they changed the policy again and made it even more strict this year?
Because basically some of the students, like, again, they won't even like, they're not even learning and stuff. They're just watching videos and listening to music on their phones. And some kids have headphones or AirPods. It's another issue. Mm-hmm. And now this new, idea they're doing is that if you don't even put your phone away, then you'll probably get suspended and they have to call your parents and things like that. And they have those phone pockets basically right. in classrooms. And if they don't put it away, they're going to have to put it in the pockets. And so it's AirPods, my bad.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, so that, I mean, that's the thing. Before we came on air here, we were talking about the actual current policy, reminding ourselves of sort of what it was like. But last year it was much more like you got a few times that you could be in any particular class and sort of say, yeah, you were seen using your phone. And some things went home. And then it actually was quite a few times before it really went out of the classroom. And that's probably one of the biggest changes with this new policy is that you really only get one time in that classroom where it can kind of go in a pocket. And then, you know, you kind of go into the system and stuff to say, yeah, here's the one time. And a note goes home and all that. But then after that, it gets more severe, much, much quicker, right? They're really... Four layers to this, and then 2, 3, and 4 really all involve administrators being involved and, potential RISE program stays and having your phone go into the office and stuff. And so it definitely gets more intense quicker with it. What thoughts do you have just about, you know, about why it happened and the bigger change for this year?
I think the main change was that it just wasn't being taken seriously, both by students and by teachers, yeah. In some sense. Our thing here is bell to bell, no cell,
yep.
which is something that I found myself repeating as a joke to my friends if I saw them on my cell phone, just because it was such a funny thing to say, yeah, I guess. Yeah. But this year, it's definitely... Well, last year, the thing was that it just wasn't really being not taken seriously enough, but this year it's like an entirely different world almost. It's being taken incredibly seriously because of the threat of like getting parents and like a in-school suspension involved. So I think, yeah, it changed last year just because it wasn't really being taken as seriously as it should have been.
Yeah. And my understanding for whatever it's worth is that there's been, you know, they're keeping the numbers on all of this. And last year, I think September alone, I can't remember how many write-ups they had.
It was something like 300. It was wild.
I think it was even high. It may have been even higher. There was something that kind of went out for it, and it's like a quarter of that now. So meaning that people are definitely taking it more seriously. I'm finding in my classroom that even though I was pretty strict with it last year, this year being equally strict, it's actually been easier. I think I've only done maybe one or two situations that I've had so far, and they've been minor. So I do think that's all been for the better. The question is, and as we come back, we're going to take a quick break here in a second, but as we come back, the idea of sort of talking about the other things too that kind of go into play with how technological advances have really either taken us a step back or maybe even pushed us a step forward with education in terms of how all of that affects us. But there is this question too that we used to say many years ago is that could the phone in your hands in a school be effective for looking up information and doing things, whether it's a buzzer for a game show to mm-hmm. practice for a test or something like that. And we've really kind of killed all of those ideas pretty quickly within the last couple of years. Yeah. So there's a lot to think about with that. Before we come back to that, let's take a quick break and we will be right back. All right, and we are back at Up on Taconic. We are here with Cody and Brendan, and we are talking about the role of technology in the classroom. And we've been talking a lot about cell phones and cell phone policy. And as we return, one of the things we were talking about is that cell phone policies have gotten strict to the point, probably because the amount of time it takes for teachers and administrators to sort of deal with it as a problem, as opposed to what could have been potentially a solution, which is that it could enhance learning in some ways. And another thing that is out there now that is kind of similar to this is the use of AI in education and the idea that AI might be in a place to help a student cheat or whatever the right word for that is versus being helpful in their life. And we were actually looking at ChatGPT before we came on air and kind of talking about that and looking at things that it could do to really help you cheat, and then maybe some possible things that it could do to really help you enhance what you're looking at. So, and ChatGPT is sort of like kind of one of the go-tos. We were also talking about just there's also more visual types of AI, and we were even talking about AI and use of apps like Photoshop, where instead of having to know all of the things about something like Photoshop, you could just tell it what you want it to do, and it is smart enough to actually kind of do those things. So there's a lot of positives to it as well. But I want to get your take. Cody, you had seen that kind of example that we were using with ChatGPT. And what was your first impression when you saw what I was kind of doing in there?
I mean, it's interesting to look at, basically. But like you said, it's kind of like when you look up the answer to like addition or multiplication and all that for math problems, and or the answer, they look it up and then it kind of gives you the answer and stuff, but it's not right for them to do that. It's definitely the way to cheat on your work and stuff in classrooms.
Yeah, and the idea of, like, you're talking about math as an example, right? And there's probably different situations where you can literally just take a picture of a problem and it will just show you it will actually do the work for you, because a lot of it was it would give you the answer, but it wouldn't necessarily show the work. Now it can actually show the work. You can write it out, and if you want, you know, I think it's kind of common knowledge on things like that. So there are lots of ways to use this, and I think part of it is that it's the teacher's challenge now to come up with assignments that make it so that it would be impossible for you to use things like that. So, like, Brendan, thinking about, like even just positives to this, are there ways that you feel like you're using AI in the classroom in different ways that it's giving you a good result, that's something that you and the teacher would both agree on?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. My belief on AI is that it should be seen more as a tool and less of a solution. There's, as your example of like being able to use Photoshop for someone who's not very experienced in it, it's just as easy as saying what you want to happen.
Yep.
But there's also a very fine line on whether you like look up an example for how you want to write an English paper compared to just taking what ChatGPT spit out, copy and pasting that, submitting that as your English paper.
Right.
It should be seen as more of a tool to get to a final result instead of just giving you a final result.
Yeah.
Additionally, it's also not as reliable as people make it out to be. It definitely still is not a finished product, and it is not without its errors.
Well, and you were talking about this really. Share this example that you had earlier, because I didn't know about this and I thought this was amazing.
So a bit of background knowledge is that the way that ChatGPT works is it takes everything you read at face value, and it is not very good at holding context unless you tell it explicitly to do so. And so what it does is it takes the last word that they wrote, and then it expands on specifically that word or that phrase, and it doesn't take in the context on which it previously wrote. And it stores all this information in ones and zeros instead of actually typing out the words, because it's easier to code, easier to do all that. So one thing that ChatGPT cannot do is tell you how many R's are in the word strawberry. There are, of course, 3 R's, but because it stores the information in that condensed format, it says that there are 2 R's in the word strawberry.
Right. And I had a hard time believing that, but sure enough, we put it in there and it came back and said there were 2 R's very definitively. And it just, something so simple that this smart thing just doesn't know that. And it also kind of gives you sort of a warning, like a buyer beware, that if you think you're going to be doing a lot of your work on there are probably pitfalls that you could, by putting something in there and thinking you're going to hand over the right answer to the teacher, and then to find out that there could be some very, very simple things in there that they could see. One story that I always remember is that right after we came back from COVID in the classroom, I was teaching a class on art appreciation, visual art appreciation. And I had a student who clearly was not super interested in the topic. I was giving them different ways to process, looking at different pictures and different paintings and such, and kind of saying, what do you think about this? But out of the blue, one day, one student that I knew wasn't particularly interested in it gave me this really amazing answer. And I noticed something with it, which was that the word color was spelled, I think, in the British form, like C-O-L-O-U-R, every time. And that was not something that I knew of the student in terms of what they would have done or the style they would have written in there and stuff. But sure enough, I decided to do what us teachers do, which is that we take a sentence or two, we put quotes around and put it into Google. And usually if there's a place they copied it from directly and just copied and pasted, usually you could see that, but it wasn't there. And my guess was at the time I started to do some research, and this is before ChatGPT came out, and I found other websites, kind of primitive versions of the websites that would write things for you in such a unique way that it wasn't searchable. But the word color was the thing that stuck out to me. And then, you know, you start to get a sense of where things were going. And it probably wasn't for another year and a half, but I remember sort of like raising the red flags to administrators saying, are you seeing this? Look at this, because I think, look at this website, because it can write their papers for them now, and you've got to be careful. And sure enough, here we are a couple of years later with all of that. So,
and I have another question.
Yeah.
So while we were talking out in the hallways, I told you about this YouTuber, Steely, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy makes Eminem IA voices, like, yep. Slim Shady and modern Eminem.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's also kind of an issue, but it's not kind of school-related, kind of.
No, but you're making a good point, though, which is that there are things out there that go beyond things like ChatGPT, where we can create, you know, we see this all the time in the media, where they create the voice of the president, and then they have him say something he would never say, and it becomes controversial, right? And it's the same thing. You can get something like Eminem and get his voice to sound like something and then put things out that may have be in his style or in the way he does it, or maybe something he wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And it gives him a bad name potentially, right?
Yeah.
You were gonna say.
I'm a firm believer that AI and creative works should stay in completely separate worlds. Yeah. I read this quote, and it was something along the lines of, you can tell that human art has a soul, because if you look at AI art, it is without a soul.
Yeah.
And it's definitely apparent with programs such as Midjourney, which can create like really high definition, detailed like cartoon images or even like photorealism, but yep. there's something off about it.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think when we think about the arts in general, we are, you know, as an example, and I'll just talk about something recently that the other day I was just at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and I was at the Salvador Dali, one of my favorite artists, the exhibition that's going on there through and going to be ending in the late fall. And you think about this artist was making art based on dreams. And he would actually do a thing where he would sit in a chair and take a nap, but he would put something really heavy in his hand and lean it over the arm of the chair. And when at the height of a dream, he would often drop the object, and it would make a huge noise and it would wake him up at the right moment so he could remember the crux of that dream. And then he would make art out of what he remembered from the dream. There's no way to AI that. And when you think about how many artists do unique things like that, there's nothing that will ever take the place of the interesting way that the human brain works when it's conscious, and especially when it's unconscious, mm-hmm. right? So I think you're absolutely right in some ways that the AI might play some simple role maybe in some ways of maybe putting something together or something, but ultimately the idea needs to come from the human brain. And I think that's a really good point.
And yeah. Even like on YouTube, when I go on YouTube, it sends me like a bunch of notifications on his voice and stuff, like Eminem, like yeah. I said. And even though like, I'm like, okay, but I get it that the new album came out, mm-hmm. but you don't have to make videos because of his voice and stuff. Like I get it. His album's now kind of like his last album now. It's like his 12th album now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of going a little too far, but not really that far. But I listen to it and it doesn't rarely sound like him as much because it's mixed with the original song.
Yeah. Yeah. And it taints in some ways too, that the artist has their own style, their own voice, everything about them is their own thing. And then by adding AI to them, whether it's complimenting it or not, it's changing it. And it's not that artist on some level anymore. And I think you're absolutely right, both of you, to kind of say that that it's something that we probably want to lean away from, because it's really probably just not helping promote the arts in the right way, right? So, So let me get to just one final question before we end for today, which is, I want you to kind of be a prophet. I want you to kind of be a soothsayer here, and I want you to kind of look ahead into the future and think about this a little bit in terms of where you think this is all going. I'm just picking a random year of 2040 here, but what do you think education, knowing what we know now, we're a couple of years into AI and stuff, add another 15 or so years to that. Where do you think we will be, Brendan, I'll start with you, just in terms of where do you think we will be with education in terms of how we learn, given the fact that we will be even so much more advanced from there in terms of what computers can do for us?
Well, I think that there's two sides to this story. There's one that either the teacher is going to have to evolve and create lesson plans that aren't something that could be so easily done through AI,
right?
Or they're going to devolve back to doing everything on paper, handwritten. Nothing is through the internet. Nothing can be typed out. And it's truly the student's own work being read instead of a teacher or instead of a student going online, finding something or creating something with AI and putting it through.
Yeah. I mean, we get to a point where I think after when the calculator came out, right, there was a certain point after a certain amount of time that we would accept that basic math functions didn't always need to be done out by hand, that they could be done maybe as part of a bigger, you could almost get to the bigger problem because the calculator could help you and get to those answers quicker. You didn't need to know off the top of your head what 64 times 64 was. You could just do that, get to that answer, and then start to answer the bigger question that you were trying to do. And I do wonder by 2040 if there'll be more things that we can do that would be assumed that a computer should be able to do and we don't have to do ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Cody, why don't you jump in on this? What do you think education is going to be like in 2040?
Well, I hope they should like fix some things with AI instead of just using the voices, like I said, because I don't know if it's illegal to do voices of that celebrity or singer, but I think that education is very important for us because we need, like, we can, like Brendan said, we can just use like paper and use our notebooks and stuff, and we don't have to deal with like phones and computer. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just, it's kind of, you know, let's just say like it's not educational because again, they've been using it and we're kind of addicted to phones and laptops because it's like, that's what my parents say. Cause you know what? You're too addicted to the phones and stuff. Go outside. Yeah. Do something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a really good way to kind of bring this all back full circle, which is this starts off with the idea of what do we do if we don't have our phone in our hand, or if we don't have ChatGPT up on our laptop in terms of what we can do ourselves. And I think that's probably a good place to maybe just kind of end the conversation for today. There's so much to think about with this, right? I mean, there's just so much in terms of AI. There's so much to think about. Are we now in a place with our phones where there could be some positive things that could come out of it, but we've just put ourselves in a bad place and had to come up with stricter policies and a lot for us to kind of like think about as we kind of close our conversation for the day. So I want to, good, Cody.
So I would like to, again, it's about Eminem, but congratulations on the new album, man. Good job.
All right. There you go. We got some Eminem plugs in there. So, Cody, Brendan, thank you so much for joining us today on Up on Taconic. We want to thank our listeners on WTBR 89.7 FM and for streaming on our podcast sites like Spotify and CastBox. If you want to reach out to us, ask us any questions, think about a topic that we'd like to do, please email us at taconictv@pittsfield.net. And we hope again that you will join us soon, and we will see you next time on Up on Taconic. Up on Taconic has been a production of Taconic TV and podcast produced at the Taconic Podcast Studio in Pittsfield, Mass., and this week featured Brendan and Cody. The show was produced using state-of-the-art Rode podcasting hardware and Pro Tools software, and it was taped in September of 2024.